Big show for you. Monday, October 14th, 2019, Columbus Day in Connecticut, right here on Connecticut Today. We were joined early on by an expert from the financial sector commenting on what he would do portfolio-wise and investment-wise if and or when impeachment ever happens. Brian Lockhart checked in from Hearst Connecticut Media and the Connecticut Post updating the situation with legal challenges surrounding the September Bridgeport Democratic mayoral primary. Also, Scott Dolch checked in from the Connecticut Restaurant Association. His association still trying to work something out with legislators and the Labor Department regarding the controversial 80-20 rule in Connecticut bars and restaurants. But in one of the burning issues on this Columbus Day, we talked about the swirling controversy surrounding some very popular macaroni and cheese. And that's us, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. WICC 600 on the radio, online at WICC600.com. By the way, this whole thing, you know, there are some things, you know, I have to take a breath here before I get myself in trouble. There are people that are stupid, that have very little to do during the day, I guess. Now, I should talk, but I get paid to talk about this. So. everybody seems to be crazy. Did you see this? This is why social media and Twitter are the worst. And you know, honestly, some people, just please. I mean, I guess social media is fine, but I mean, come on. Everybody's aghast now. Ooh. Everybody's all nuts over the way Panera Bread makes their mac and cheese. Have you seen this? Have you seen this?
I actually saw this on Twitter because whoever the girl was that actually
who's now out of a job. Yeah, how's that working out?
I saw her. Someone had retweeted her original tweet saying that she was out of a job.
And,
but my question is, what do you expect when you go to a place like Panera Bread?
It's a mass market cheese. Well, I thought, Aaron, that they made it fresh in the back. No, you idiots. This is mass-produced stuff. They say they have their own recipe. Well, and folks, if you don't know what's going on here, Panera Bread's a chain. The food's pretty good. I've been there a couple times. All right, it's good. It's clean. It's not, you know, your loins don't quiver when you go into Panera Bread, okay? And their mac and cheese is said to be really good, and it is. I had it once. It's you know, it's a great comfort food, right? You know, it's probably 500 calories, 600 a serving, whatever. So one person who worked there thought it was all this scandalous thing that the recipe, which is theirs, which they actually shared once or twice, the recipe, right, they make it, I guess, at a central location. They flash freeze it, and then what happens is when you go to Panera Bread, they drop a packet of it to heat it up. Remember, if any of you did basic chemistry in class, boiling water will heat something. In fact, sometimes it's better to heat it in a packet with boiling water, right, than do it in an oven or on a grill or whatever. So all these, obviously, another one of these bored out of her mind millennials says she's going to burn Panera Bread and say, look at this, look at how they make their mac and cheese. Well, she got fired, one, which is good. She should be fired. I'd tell her to go screw if I own the company, too. But now everybody's weighing in. What fraud. Oh, my God. I mean, Perez Hilton, he's the gossip guy. I'm glad he tweeted on this. Perez Hilton, are you grossed out by how Panera Bread prepares their mac and cheese? No, I'm not, you idiot, because boiling something in a bag, as I said, if you knew anything, it's often the best way to heat something. How much stuff is frozen do we find? Flash frozen stuff that they put in bags and people heat it in boiling water. You don't have to put it in an oven. The heat in boiling water is a better way to heat things up. It's the same recipe, but they have to mass produce it.
That's what got me so annoyed by this. And it did. I was very... like, what do they think? Someone's grandmother was back there making the stuff? And every individual Panera Bread across the country?
I hate to tell you, there are enough stupid people in this country who think that. Who think that. There are enough idiotic people in this country who say, well, number one, these are the same people that... Now, you know, Aaron, by this time tomorrow, there'll be counseling being offered for these people. Like when Ben Shapiro or some of our Ann Coulter goes to like a Connecticut college campus and they have to give out pacifiers, blankets, and counseling. That's what I would do. If I ran Panera right now, I'd have Panera pacifiers. I'd give them right out. Upset with our mac and cheese? Here, suck on this. That's what I'd say. It's a nice pacifier. It's a Panera pacifier. The clip, which has over 6 million views, USA Today says, shows a Panera Bread worker placing a frozen bag of their macaroni and cheese into a vat of boiling water. Mm. Man, the UN's going to have to meet on this. I'm hopefully the UN is going to. I would hope as a citizen of the world that the Security Council will meet tomorrow and really get all the countries together. Don't worry about human trafficking or global warming or wars, what's going on in Syria. We really need to calm millennials now about how their mac and cheese is made. I'll try to get myself together here. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
How are you? It is round two of our four-hour get-together today. Like Mr. Big Voice said, it's a Monday, it's Columbus Day, and this is Connecticut Today right here on WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Well, if you don't like the talk of impeachment, you might as well get on your spaceship and leave for the next couple of years, because that's all you're going to hear from now, probably through Election Day next year. We'll keep you updated on it right here at WICC. But how would it affect the economy, and in particular, folks who have retirement funds, 401ks, right? What do I do? Do I invest? Do I still, you know, sell high and buy low, whatever? We're going to talk to Val Pinkasoff. He's president of Total Merchant Resources on this well-known brokerage house and financial services firm. Val, good to have you to join us. Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, this from a guy that has a position like you must be interesting, and I'm sure you hear different points of view from customers, from investment folks, from prognosticators, economists who are generally wrong about 50% of the time. But as you look at this, Val, from afar, and if somebody comes up to you and says, oh, Val, what am I going to do? The market with Trump and this and the other. What's your initial thought on this whole thing?
Based on what you just told me, I'm going to tell him to go try to find a spaceship, you know, and disappear.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would tell people just to, you know, keep it business as usual. You know, one man, no matter how powerful they are, can't control, you know, the economy that, you know, in that effect. You know, you got a lot of moving parts here, you know. So, you know, we fund all sorts of businesses here in my company, you know. And every business owner that I talk to, if they're a good business owner and they have a successful business, they're just, you know, worried about how customers are coming in and, you know, how to do the proper marketing. And, you know, they're just handling things as they come. And, you know, we don't see much of an effect, believe it or not.
You know, it's weird, though. People tend, Val, to kind of, they get antsy, in particular if they're if they're not the normal investor. You have day traders out there. You have guys and gals who do sit in front of screens all day and this and the other. And you see, oh my God, look at the poll numbers. For example, if Elizabeth Warren has a really good poll from a reputable poll, what happens? Well, you see the market goes down 200 or 300 points. So I think, Val, people are so inculcated with all this information, it's hard for them not to worry.
Yeah, there's always going to be information, you know, and any day trader will tell you that, you know, they're constantly in tune with everything that's going on, weather and everything, you know. When you're looking at an investor, you got to look at the long picture. And if you look back at Nixon and you look back at Clinton during their impeachment, you know, their impeachment didn't impact the market, not much at least. You know, you had other catalysts that would create any downturns in the market or upswings. So, you know, Trump's style of leadership has been unusual, right? We all know that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, the economy is probably more worried about, you know, what's going on in China, what's going on with the global economy, you know, who's buying, who's selling, why are they doing that? And when you're looking at small business owners in our country, you could see that, you know, the economy is still strong. Believe me, we're in a cycle. I own a lot of real estate, and for the last 2 years, I've been saying to myself, you know, the economy is going to turn. The economy is going to turn, and it just keeps going. So here we have the impeachment, but the economy is still going strong. You know, just look at stocks, look at development in real estate.
Yeah.
You know, commercial and residential properties are being built, you know, by the neighborhoods all over the place.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm in New York City a lot. We're only, you know, we're only about an hour train ride out from here in Bridgeport. I'm in the city a lot. And, yeah, for all this dire word you hear, you know, Val, about the economy, I'm looking up and every block in Manhattan, there seems to be another building, either residential or commercial or combination use going up. So somebody's making money.
Absolutely. And that's exactly my point. I think the impeachment is there a narrative right now? It's a relevant story, but is it a story that's going to be relevant to how the economy turns out? I personally don't think so.
You did mention something a couple of minutes ago that we talk about almost every day here on the show. And by the way, the guest is Val Pinkasov, head of Total Merchant Resources. The whole thing with China and the narrative on that, Val, seems to change almost daily. We have a deal. We don't have a deal. They're going to buy more. They're not going to buy more. I would guess for some of the businesses that you deal with and folks in your line of work deal with, if they have all these international connections, which may not have been the case 20, 30, 40 years ago, that's something that gets them, I would think, a little nauseous.
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul. You know, we deal with a lot of different service-oriented companies, you know, like accountants and contractors and the such, doctors, you know. You know, we fund all sorts of businesses. And those types of service-oriented companies, they're not feeling, you know, the effects of the trade wars, obviously, unless it's on a personal level, when they go and they buy, you know, consumer goods for their for themselves or their family. But the retail places, you know, the places that sell clothes or, let's say, auto parts, things of that nature, you know, they have mentioned, you know, some concern about, you know, the tariffs and the effect of the trade wars. But, you know, for now, it's I think people, you know, like you and I who are going to buy stuff are paying up. You know, you don't see people in restaurants. You know, let me rephrase. You don't see people staying home and not going to restaurants because they're worried about spending extra money.
No, because they work 40, they work 50 hours a week. They want to go have a nice meal.
Yeah, so you know, so people are still buying stuff. You know, the tariffs are obviously on our mind. You know, you look back when the oil industry, you know, started to create a lot of waves, and it obviously trickled down to logistics. So people had to pay a lot more money for eggs and for water and for milk and. You know, anything that, you know, had to be transported. And when the oil industry finally simmered down, the prices really stayed where they were.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people were expecting them to recede a little bit, and they didn't.
I think these I think on that case, Val, certain things, commodities, oil, stuff that people use, I mean, it's all kind of got like a natural price point, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's a market. You know, any which way you slice it, whether it's tariffs or whether it's, you know, chaos in the Middle East, whatever the circumstances are that would drive basic fundamental goods that we would buy, at the end of the day, it's a market. And, you know, people get used to paying something. Mm-hmm. The people who are selling it get used to charging it. And everybody moves on with their life. You know, I don't know if you could call that inflation or what. But, you know, the small business owners that we're dealing with right now, you know, they do feel some effect of the tariffs and the whole issue with the trade wars. But, you know, they're running their business, and things are still strong. So it'll be interesting to see how things turn out, you know, over the next year or so with how everything kind of simmers down, because it will simmer down eventually.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, what you point at when you tell people to just calm down, take a breath, and I guess, for lack of a better term, Val, don't do anything dumb.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, if things were always so easy and so easy to predict, you know, life would be boring.
Right.
So I think the successful business owner or the successful individual in general, you know, their success is really defined a lot by how they adapt to changes. you know?
Yeah.
And this is just one of those circumstances.
Val Pinkasoff, president of Total Merchant Resources. Val says, calm down, take it easy, everything will be fine. Hey, Val, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it.
You got it, Paul. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks. Be good. There you go.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Hey, how are you? Hope all is well on this Columbus Day 2019, Monday the 14th. We're at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Haven't had him on in a while, so we're going to bring back Brian Lockhart, our buddy from the Hearst Connecticut Media, Connecticut Post, to kind of give us an overview on what is happening here regarding the ongoing courtroom cha-cha and all this and possibilities, what might happen, what might not happen with the Bridgeport mayoral controversy. Brian, Paul here. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm good.
Well, you know, we're following along the stuff that you and the team are doing there, you and Ken Dixon and all the folks at Hearst Connecticut Media following this whole thing. I guess now, Brian, we're kind of in a holding pattern on a lot of this, seeing how all this shakes out, but there's not a whole bunch of time left here, is there?
There's not, although the state law does give the presiding judge in this, Judge Stevens, mm-hmm. A pretty wide range of powers, including voiding the results of the primary and, you know, even possibly delaying the November 5th yeah. general election. But you're right that we are in a holding pattern just waiting for the case to wrap up. I think initially folks thought maybe there would be a quicker ruling on this, but now we're going into week three in terms of appearing in court. And the hope, I think, is for the actual court hearings to wrap up tomorrow and for the sides to get in their written, basically their written conclusions, their written summations.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we'll have a decision later this week. It's hard to say.
You know, when you watch an NFL game or any sort of a game, baseball, where they have a replay review, Brian, people say, well, you know, the longer they're taking a look at this, this has been a while, looks like they may reverse the call on this one. And is the length that this is taking, is this surprising you or not? Or is this any sort of indication that there is a serious deliberative process going on here?
I think you can look at it either way. I mean, I guess if you are the plaintiffs in this case, if you're the folks who were raising the questions about the validity of some of these absentee ballots and the judge is taking this much time, you may feel as if your concerns are being taken very seriously, the evidence is being taken very seriously, and that this is going in your direction. On the other hand, however, it could just be that the judge is being very thorough
mm-hmm.
and wants both sides to feel that they have been heard and that they have been allowed to present all their evidence before ultimately making a ruling that, you know, perhaps could go in the favor of the city as opposed to the plaintiffs. You know, something that's interesting about this is Stevens is sort of a new factor here
mm-hmm.
as well, because previously there was another judge, Barbara Bellis, Superior Court Judge Barbara Bellis, who had handled some of these elections issues in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
And folks, I think, generally had a better sense of how she would rule. She was someone who didn't seem to like the status quo here, didn't necessarily seem to like the politics here in the city, and so would tend to rule in favor of shaking things up a little bit. Stevens, she was just reassigned, or she just left for Waterbury, for court in Waterbury.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the factors in this, is people, a lot of people said, well, if Bellis was still on the stand, we probably would have had a new primary, or these results turned out. With Stevens, people are kind of waiting to see. He's kind of an unknown in terms of how he's going to rule on this.
Really? And Brian, one of the things I was kind of openly wondering about before we did the segment with you is, let's say in the extreme scenario here, the judge in the case says, you know what, we need a new primary. Well, then the whole process of new absentee ballots then, I mean, the requests for the ballots, getting the ballots out, I mean, getting the polling places, Brian, open is relatively easy. It takes time, but you just open up those again. What would they do with the absentees here? That'd be really interesting.
Well, if we're looking at kind of a model for this,
yeah.
We don't have to look that far. They did back in 2017, early 2018, and in that case, it was Barbara Bellis.
Yeah.
Barbara Bellis twice called for a do-over in a city council primary in the North End. Now, you got to remember, too, that this was a city council primary, and it was a primary. So it was a smaller race. It wasn't a citywide race, and turnout wasn't expected to be very high. But in that case, she had, and I can't remember all the details off the top of my head, but basically she had ordered some folks to kind of keep an eye on the process.
Yeah.
When she ordered the redo. So she appointed a gentleman to kind of be the watchdog to try and make sure that things went smoothly and that some of the mistakes, some of the errors, some of the fraud, because that was one of her conclusions, is there was some fraud in that race with some of the ABs, wouldn't happen again. So conceivably that could be one of the remedies here. If the judge decided to have a do-over, he could order some sort of a court-appointed observer to keep tabs on things and try and avoid some of the issues that got us into this controversy in the first place.
And, you know, Brian, I've been musing here on the show saying, listen, no matter what happens, no matter what is decided here, you know, the next time this has a potential to happen, you know, 4 years from now, let's say that this stands or it doesn't stand or whatever, I think the city really has to look again to the future here, is saying, okay, we've been through this now a number of times. How do we get this so going into election day, you know, people all around the state, unfortunately, and us in the media don't go, well, wink, wink, here we go with the absentees again. I mean, how do we do that?
You know, that is a good question. I'm going to answer it sort of with another question, which is, you know, you do have to wonder if one of the ways to avoid this in the future is to change state law having to do with ABs, either clarifying the rules that exist, better clarifying the rules that exist, or I know some people would push for expanded voting. So no excuse absentees, for example. Early voting, where you can go to a polling place. It doesn't have to be on one day. You can go to a polling place a couple days sooner. You know, to be fair, on the one hand, we looked at the ABs and some independent groups, independent of us, who are involved in this lawsuit, they looked at the ABs and came up with several examples of you know, questionable ABs, questionable conduct, where folks pressured to vote for a candidate, where folks who had really no reason to vote by AB were they pressured to vote that way.
Yeah.
The other side of it, though, is I do think that there are some gray areas where, and I've had this discussion with people, a senior citizen, for example, you know, someone who has good days and bad days. Maybe they legitimately believe that it's okay to vote AB because they're worried that they're going to wake up on election day and not feel great.
Oh, sure.
And not want to go out. The problem is, though, the law doesn't really accommodate that. I mean, the law doesn't say, because you and I could say, well, geez, you know, maybe I'll get sick on election day. I better vote by AB. We can't do that.
No.
You know, the law, you really have to have an illness, meaning an illness that will keep you immobilized, keep you hospitalized. And I think that's kind of the problem, is I think that there is this general sort of misunderstanding. I do think there are a lot of people who legitimately believe that the AB laws in Connecticut are for convenience. If you don't want to go on election day, vote AB. And that's just not the case. And so the question is, do you clarify that so that you better educate people as to what the rules are, or do you toss out the existing rules and make it easier? And I think that's one of the things the state really has to wrestle with, because until you do, I don't know if you're ever really going to get rid of some of the issues in Bridgeport. I mean, you would hope some of the people, if they are intentionally abusing the system, that everything we're dealing with now will teach them a lesson, and maybe there'll be some new safeguards in place in future elections. But I don't think without clarification of the state laws and or expansion of the state laws, I don't know if these problems are ever going to be fully solved.
Brian, thanks, buddy. We appreciate the time. Brian Lockhart, Connecticut Post, Hearst, Connecticut Media. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, yeah, it's a good point there, right? It's, you know, again, there's specific law dealing with absentee ballots. Should that be tightened up? 203 333-9422, 333-WICC. You know, should absentee ballots, I don't know, should the law be tightened? Because remember, now it's only supposed to be military or if you're out of the country or physical inability to get to the polls. I think he's right there. It starts with the ABs.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Hey there. Hi there. How are you? We are at WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Hope all is well with you and yours. How are you? Everything good? Relaxing on this Columbus Day? Want to thank our next guest for taking a little holiday time to talk to us. We welcome back to the program here in Connecticut Today on WICC, the Executive Director of the Connecticut Restaurant Association, Scott Dolch, is with us. Scott, Paul here in Bridgeport again. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
And thanks for taking the time, Scott. Appreciate it. Well, you were up at the Capitol. We talked the other day. You were at the Capitol on last week, tail end of last week, when there was that big public hearing. Again, there's no special session set, Scott. We may have to wait till the short session at the beginning of the year, but we're still trying to figure out this 80-20 rule, and we thought we had this figured out with a bill that was passed by the the General Assembly overwhelmingly several months ago. The governor vetoes this, so I guess, Scott, a lot of your member restaurants and establishments are still kind of waiting to see what's going to happen and how they might be affected and how they pay their employees.
Absolutely. I think, and I hit the nail on the head, I think we've talked about this before, obviously, with the hearing, which, we had on Thursday and made sure that, we had over 150 restaurateurs that came out to the Capitol knowing how serious this issue is. And it's a sense of urgency. Obviously, we've talked with the governor and a lot of other leadership just about, what we're asking to get accomplished here. And I think we have the support of the governor and others and hoping, obviously special sessions, a weird request all the time of trying to get something done. But I do think, with following up from the hearing, we're hoping we can try to move and get a date scheduled for the legislators to come in and vote to pass LCO 11202. I guess that's the name of it. As I tried to say as much as I could on Thursday.
No, that's fine. And I talk to people about this, Scott, on the show here, and just chat with them, friends of mine. And I guess the problem you're having here, Scott, is the perception that, well, if a lot of this hired help, if we modify the rule, if it costs restaurants a little more, that's fine. Suck it up and pay. What's your comeback to that? Your reaction to that?
Well, I think that's really why we're there on Thursday too. I think it's a misconception of what we're trying to get accomplished here. So for the viewers or the layman people that don't work in a restaurant, understand. Every state that has a tip credit or has, the tipped employees in the country follows this 80-20 guidelines. It's kind of the difference between service and non-serviceable work. If you go to a restaurant, like I'm sure many people are at tonight, or going out, your servers haven't, or your bartenders have to do not only serviceable work with the customers, but, filling ketchup bottles, going to get, replace salt and pepper shakers, roll some silverware for their next customers, go to get ice, fill a six-pack of beer, put back in the fridge, I'm sorry. So that is work that's part of their job. We're not talking about cleaning bathrooms. We're not talking about doing other jobs or being a hostess or another cook. This is just about the serviceable work. And that 80-20 rule has been followed by every other state. Obviously, it's been followed by Connecticut. For decades, has been guidelines the DOL has provided my members in our restaurants. But the issue is there's a regulation that really contradicts that. So if you were to follow what the guidelines the DOL provided you, you're really putting yourself up for being liable to be sued. And that's really where we were at on Thursday, is just saying, listen, this isn't about paying people less, having them do more. This is about following a standard that every other state, as well as Connecticut, has been following for years. Let's continue to work together with the DOL to make sure our guidelines and our regulations match up. We're not trying to take anything away. I represent 119,000 restaurant employees, so employees as well as owners, making sure that at the end of the day, I'm worried about everybody, and we have to have clear and codified
rules. We can't have regulations that don't mirror guidelines that come from the DOL. And I think that's all that this is about. This isn't about trying to pay people less. This isn't about trying to make them do more. Obviously, like I said, even in the hearing, if someone was asked to clean a bathroom or someone is asked to work, you know, on the line or make salads or something like that, they should be paid minimum wage. But, you know, not when they're, you know, we're just talking about the service and bartending service duties and what those are. And that's all that this is about. I think it's gotten, you know, some mixed messaging for people that don't understand that. And realistically, I used an analogy at the hearing. It's, you know, in a sense, like, you know, with state troopers or police, if they wrote a note to everybody lived in Connecticut and said, hey, the highways are going to be 70 miles an hour, you know, and there are going to be signs up that say 70 miles an hour, and you drive 70 tomorrow on, you know, 5 or 15 or obviously on 95, mm-hmm. and you get pulled over, and they say, no, the regulations is still 60 or 65, here's your ticket. And that's really what's happened to our restaurants is they were given guidelines to say, follow this 80-20, make sure you stay within it. Here's all the other guidelines. It's a 48-page guidebook. And that's what they followed. And unfortunately, that's not what the reg says. And that's where they're getting caught in these legal battles. And all we're trying to do is clear that up so we can continue to move forward and go from, you know, I talked about, we want to continue. The hospitality industry is one of the only industries in Connecticut that's actually at least doing well or staying above the norm like others. And mm-hmm. I think we want to continue to do that and not have restaurateurs be worried about, you know, lawsuits or worried about, you know, because they're doing something or what are the new guidelines. And I think we've worked with the DOL and Kurt and their team, the commissioner, as well as the governor to say, hey, this is what this is about. And I think there was some clarity, but there's obviously like anybody that people that don't understand the industry in and out.
Yeah.
They, you know, I think that's, oh, I appreciate you having me on to really explain. That's really what we're talking about. And I hope we can get to that point where we can pass something in special session, because if we don't, we're going to continue with this mixed messaging of, you know, what do I need to tell my members, you know, what they should be doing, because realistically, you know, they've been following something for years that is now, you know, putting them at odds of potential, you know, huge liabilities and huge lawsuits.
Yeah, and it is frustrating, Scott, and Scott Dolch is the guest, executive director of the Connecticut Restaurant Association. It's frustrating because, as you say, and I remember getting this guidance mailed to us when my family, as I was growing up, we had a family grocery store, and my father would say, oh, here's the notification we got from the state about what we have to do with taxes and wages. And as you say, Scott, this isn't anything nefarious here. These owners, these bar and grill and restaurant and store owners, you know, they're just doing what the state told them to do. That's the maddening thing about this.
Well, that's deep down, Paul. That's what it's really about. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, no one is, you know, everybody, you know, when you talk about restaurants and you go into them, as everyone does in our state, I mean, the employees are the most important people mm-hmm. to make a restaurant successful. And the last thing they want to do is they're not trying to take advantage. And obviously, I said this to a couple legislators on Thursday, there's bad actors in every business, you know, and I'm not saying everyone's following it the way they should, but that should have nothing to do with the guidelines being misinterpreted from the reg. And I think, you know, if there are bad actors, if there are restaurants that are taking advantage of their employees in any way, like I used the example of, you know, cleaning bathrooms, going out to take out trash when they're being paid a service wage, like, mm-hmm. absolutely, let me know. And I will be glad to walk in with the legislator, with the DOL into that restaurant, ask the owner, what is going on? Like, because that's not, you know, we do not want to have, you know, I think that you don't want to have these misconceptions about what is going on and trying to fix this. And I think, like you said, they were being told one thing, they did it, and now if they were doing it, you know, they're opening themselves up to, and we're not talking about, these are small businesses. I mean, 85% of my members are small business owners. When you talk about, you know, the costs that are associated with some of these cases, just trying to defend themselves when they were doing the right, what they thought was the right thing or working in good faith, I mean, they're almost putting them out of business.
Yeah.
You know, and some of the cases, a couple of them are calling me almost on a daily basis. They say, I don't know if I can, I can't, I don't, I mean, we work off a 3-5% profit margin is the national average of a restaurant. Like, you know, to be hit with tens of thousands of dollars in monthly legal fees when they're really not, you know, they're showing that they were following these guidelines, but it's, you know, potentially could put them out of business. And then we're not talking about one or two employees. We're talking about these restaurants going out and all the employees that work for them coming into work the next day saying, wait a minute, I don't have a job anymore. Where did this go? And I think that's the last thing I hope the legislators hopefully heard from us on Thursday. That's the last thing anybody wants in our state, is to see businesses, you know, having to close their doors and have people lose their jobs.
Scott, hang on. We'll be right back to you. Scott Dolch is the guest, once again, Executive Director, Connecticut Restaurant Association. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion as to what's happening with this 80-20 rule. And speaking of numbers, folks, you hear that? The average restaurant nationwide, as Scott just said, a 3 to 5% profit margin, 3 to 5% gap. That's why so many restaurants end up going under. And would tightening or would a ratcheting up of this law that allows more lawsuits, would that be a good thing? As we continue with Scott Dolch, Executive Director, Connecticut Restaurant Association, as we try to figure out in this state a codification of a rule that lets restaurants know what they're doing, know what they can do, and know that they're okay the way they pay their people, known as the 80-20 rule. Scott, you know, I noticed some of the legislators, and you maybe talked to them last week, some of the legislators said, well, all well and good with the 80-20, but they float the term wage theft around when it comes to, you know, some restaurants, some operators, and you and I both know there are people out there, some of them, that are not above board. What's your reaction to the people who say, well, if you just keep the rule the way it is, Scott, it's going to allow wage theft? What do you say to that?
Well, first and foremost, if you keep the rule the way it is, we need to issue new guidelines. And I think one of the challenges, you know, let's just put into perspective what the regulation says, that you must segregate all time. So if you have a server that you go to a restaurant in, and if they leave your table, they're supposed to, by state reg, go to a POS system, clock out of a service wage, clock in as a minimum wage, maybe cut a lemon, go get a ketchup bottle, go back to a POS system, clock back out of minimum wage, clock back in at the server wage, and do that like 90 or probably 100 times in a shift, times how many servers in your restaurant. How is that feasibly possible? That's why we have the 80-20 rule federally and statewide for so long. So I think that realistically, to keep it where it is, that's all we're asking for, is to keep it the way that it has been, not the way the regulation, you know, maybe is written, the letter of the law, the letter of the reg, more so the guidelines that the DOL has, that they audit, that they police, that they, you know, they're our governing body. So that's really what we're asking for. I think the wage theft thing really starts to, you know, make sure people know, and even legislators, they try to say, you know, people are making less than minimum wage. They're not. And making sure everyone aware, you know, listening right now, for the layman people, is making sure in the restaurant industry, yes, they're paid $6.38 as a server, $8.23 an hour. Mm-hmm. That's their base pay before tips. So understanding that every single bartender and server in our state is federally and state protected to make, now it's $11 an hour as of October 1. So if they don't receive a tip, if there is a snowstorm or they don't get a table, they have to, by right, they have to be paid $11 an hour, and 11 months from now to be 12, we'll get up to 15. So they're protected that. So they're realistically a minimum wage employee, whether they get tips or not. But understanding from numbers, our Connecticut servers in Connecticut are making on average $25 an hour. The servers and bartenders are the highest paid earners in our industry. And making sure that people understand that we're not talking realistically about minimum wage workers, but yeah, they are protected there, but they're making well above that. And we're not asking them to do anything, hopefully that people understand, more than what they normally would do to receive the tips and manage their customers for their day. And I think, you know, when people say, hey, let's just keep it where it is, well, realistically, that's what we're asking for, is to keep the same way the DOL comes into each of our restaurants, you know, mainly on probably a yearly basis to every restaurant in our state, and audits them on wage and hour, you know, in passing. There's been no issues of this issue, because they're not following it to the reg. They're following it to their guidelines, and that's all we're asking for. So I hope that kind of clears up a little bit more and makes sure people understand, like, because wage theft is, you know, we without question, that's not something we even would ever want or ever talk about. It's obviously any server or bartender that feels they are taken advantage of, they have every right to push back on that. But
yeah, there's a mechanism, Scott. There's a mechanism in place for that, to go to the DOL, no matter whether it's a restaurant, a bar, you work for a lawyer or a mechanic or whatever. There is a set process to say, listen, I'm getting cheated out of my wages.
Well, and that's one of the things I know the DOL talked about, and we appreciate their support of this new language. And you know, the commissioner even testified on Thursday and talked about it, is, you know, we did provide these guidelines, and these do contradict the reg. And that's, you know, that says it right there. The DOL is supporting what we're asking for. Realistically, this isn't about people, you know, I think they even asked the DOL during the hearing, how many cases of this server side work have been brought to the DOL in 2018? Mm. They said four.
Four.
Four to ten. Four to ten.
Four.
Okay. But when you talk about the lawsuits of when you get it into a legal side and someone's just battling for their own livelihood, you're talking tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees. Obviously, the lawyers that are doing that, that's the scary part. That why, you know, we're saying, hey, listen, if someone's getting taken advantage of, there's an opportunity for them to go to the DOL. There's even an opportunity for them to sue at that side. But where it's kind of gotten to on the legal side is really scary, and it's scary for the restaurants that call me every day because they're like, wait a minute, am I not supposed to do this? What should I do? And I've kind of said, like, that's what we're trying to get clarity on. I'm trying to give you and provide you where there were guidelines that you know, we shared at the hearing that were up on their website for years, and they're no longer there. They're just a couple of, hey, you can't do these, like, four or five things, or you can do these four or five things. But there's so much more to that has been in those guidebooks for so long. So we're just trying to get – and I praise the DOL and the governor for, you know, his new team there with Kurt of working with us to say, let's get this passed and let's sit down so everyone knows, too. When it does get passed, it doesn't just mean restaurant owners. It puts all stakeholders, servers, everyone else at the table to come up with something that works for Connecticut. If it does change a little bit, that's fine. Mm-hmm. We're open to that conversation. But right now we're in kind of a gray area, no man's land, where there's a regulation that contradicts, obviously guidelines. And where can we get this kind of cleaned up?
Scott Dold, Scott, thanks so much. Executive Director, Head of the Connecticut Restaurant Association. Scott, thanks. We'll keep an eye on this for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate the time, as always, and look forward to being on again.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Scott Dolcher. So there you go, folks. Again, in Connecticut, we do it either the simple way or we do it the Connecticut way. We do it the convoluted, screwed-up way or we do it the simple way. We're trying to do this a simple way, and as Scott Dolcher said, and the reason I have Scott on and I've talked about this so much, there's a squat load of people that this could affect in Connecticut, well into six figures, 150, 160, 170,000 people here. And again, the Restaurant Association, its owners, the vast majority of people in the General Assembly, the restaurant owners, the Department of Labor, they're pretty much all in agreement on this of a way to go. But again, who's holding the tomahawk over these people? The lawyers. They love class action lawsuits, you know? And again, as Scott Dold said, the 2080 rule, every other state uses it. But here in Connecticut, we got to change it. Because Lord knows we do so many things well in this state. How are those potholes looking on the turnpike, huh?